Welcome to RAPcast, the podcast by Rheumatology Advanced Practice Providers, where we bring you the latest insights, research, and discussions in the field of rheumatology. I'm your host and president of RAP, Amanda Mixon, and today we are going to dive into a special segment inspired by a new segment in RAP's quarterly newsletter, Spotlight Clinical Cornerstones. Spotlight Clinical Cornerstones is an exciting initiative by RAP aimed at highlighting the incredible members of our organization. We believe in giving our members a platform to showcase their expertise and discuss topics that matter to them. In today's episode, we'll be piggybacking off the latest edition, where we feature one of our exceptional members. This segment is all about elevating their voices and shedding light on the clinical cornerstones that shape their practice. Our guest today is Mary Elliott, a physician assistant with a unique journey in becoming an APP and then becoming a rheumatology APP. We are so happy to have you today, Mary.
Yeah, thank you, Amanda. It's a real pleasure to be here on RAPcast and an honor to be the focus of the Spotlight Clinical Cornerstones.
Mary has chosen an important topic regarding transitioning into rheumatology as a field, one that I believe deserves attention and exploration as we try to address the growing workforce shortage. So get ready to be inspired, informed, and engaged as we venture into the world of rheumatology with our featured member, Mary Elliott, on this episode of RAPcast. It's time to shine the spotlight on the clinical cornerstones that shape our practice. All right, so let's just go ahead and get right into it with some questions for you. Can you tell us a little bit about your background and journey to becoming a physician assistant?
Sure. This is a second career for me. My story is a little unusual in that I didn't enter PA school until my early 50s, and I graduated in 2021, did a year of primary care, and then entered rheumatology. So how did I get here? It's funny, I really had to think about this. And a lot of the time, how we end up in the direction we go, I think is really rooted in our childhood. And for me, I think there were a number of reasons that led me here. And one is simply just epigenetics. Medicine is in my blood. Both my grandfathers were in medicine. My maternal grandfather was a cardiologist. My paternal grandfather was an eye, ear, nose, and throat doctor. An uncle was an eye doctor. My father was an orthodontist. And so I'm not sure to what extent that shaped, you know, who I became. But, my father was a town orthodontist. And I grew up in high school. I used to work as a chairside assistant in his practice. And you know, it was a very community-centered practice, and there was a strong sense of connection between the office and, you know, the patients in the town. And I remember he would have newspaper clippings on the bulletin board highlighting, you know, this was before HIPAA, so, you know, we didn't really know, but highlight, you know, all the cool things that all the students were doing, you know, in the town. And I guess I always valued that sense of connection and that centeredness of medicine to the community that it was in, you know, that I saw in my family. And I think in going into medicine, I've tried to recapture that feeling and that community. And it was a different world. So it's hard to do that today, you know, in a more corporatized medical system. But that's always been a driver for me.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I find that so, you know, interesting and just inspiring, because I think we all strive to really do that, to really be a member of the community. And I find, you know, the longer that you are in the field, you know, hopefully rheumatology forever, but you really do, you start to become, you know, just a staple in the community with your patients. And you know, I tell my patients I'm growing old with them and they're growing old with me. And so I think that's such an interesting take on it.
And, you know, that's a real appeal of rheumatology is you do develop relations over time with people. And that's really important to me. So it was, you know, it was one of the reasons I was attracted to the field. Another reason and going into medicine in general, and then subsequently into rheumatology, has to do with solving the mysteries, okay, and curiosity for its own sake. I grew up really interested in, you know, whether it was Nancy Drew, Houdini magic kits, the Ouija board, Miss Havisham and the Dickens novels, you know, all these, you know, all this mystery, magic, aesthetics and art that all sort of blended together in this very broad sense. So, and medicine was part of that. And I, you know, I remember flipping through the World Book Encyclopedia when I was a kid and going through all the clear pages, illustrating all of the different levels of anatomy, you know, the bones and the muscles and the brain and the heart. And it was very aesthetic and beautiful and fascinating and compelling. And for me, that awe has always struck. So I guess for me, mystery was comfort food and medicine was all part of that world. So another reason for going into healthcare would be just this general interest in health and wellness. I love anything having to do with the outdoors. I used to be on the board of directors of our land trust out here. I love hiking, cycling, swimming, and I keep that up and belong to our YMCA Tri Club now. And have always been interested in, I guess, there's a new trendy word out there, health span, you know, longevity, and what can we do for ourselves and for our patients to ensure that they lead not just long lives, but healthy, you know, quality of life lives. And that was another reason for being attracted to the field.
Absolutely. Music to my ears. I think that so much of what you're talking about, I think, will really resonate with our listeners. What about your journey specifically to rheumatology? I mean, you kind of already alluded to it, but how did that happen? You know, I often find that rheumatology finds you, but, you know, what is your story into rheumatology?
Well, there's a few reasons the field attracted me. And, you know, one of the reasons why I also went into medicine and specifically into rheumatology is my husband was diagnosed with ankylosing spondylitis, which ultimately led to complete heart block and pacemaker. And ankylosing spondylitis, as you know, takes decades sometimes to diagnose. And this was, you know, it's like a young person will have back pain in their 20s, and then in their 30s, and then in their 40s. And because of this journey that we went on, I know something about the importance of diagnosing and treating autoimmune diseases and catching them early on because they have systemic implications affecting the entire body. And I remember his rheumatologist prescribed methotrexate at the time, which we might not use as a first-line treatment now for ankylosing spondylitis. But this was really life-changing, and the rheumatologist in particular struck me as very smart and capable, and I thought I wanted to do that. So that would be, you know, a reason why rheumatology specifically. Another reason would be that I'm a complete nerd, and I love research, and I'm like a dog after the bone. I want to crack the code. And to solve the mystery. So it wasn't much of a leap from my background in, you know, English lit and this love of, you know, Southern or New England Gothic lit and, you know, going and rheumatology. Really, I would say if Sherlock Holmes had been a doctor, he would have been a rheumatologist. So I love that aspect of the field. You know, and I tried to get a rotation in rheumatology when I was in school, but COVID happened. And at that time, you know, the last thing rheumatologists would want would be a student walking straight out of COVID Cove from the ED into, you know, a facility where patients are, you know, immune compromised. So that didn't work out. And I was in my emergency medicine rotation, and my preceptor at the time picked up on my style. Which, you know, I'm pretty thorough. I'm a slow thinker, and I really work through cases very deliberatively, and I'm always looking for the zebras, and just really, really interested in digging deep. And he said, you know, have you ever thought of rheumatology? And I said, well, yes, in fact. And he introduced me to a PA who is recently retired, Rick Pope, Well, I don't know if you know Rick.
I do,
but,
yes.
So Rick was PA of the year at one point in Connecticut. And my emergency medicine preceptor, he gives me Rick's his email, and he says, here, you know, reach out to him, contact him, maybe he can help you. And so I emailed Rick, and within 5 minutes, I had a reply. I couldn't believe it. And he was so helpful to me and, you know, so enthusiastic about talking about rheumatology. And he's the person, I would say, who ultimately set me up with SPAR, which is Society of Physician Assistants in Rheumatology, which he had founded. And he connected me, you know, with some rheumatologists in Connecticut, and he ultimately set me on. He gave me a heads up about the first rheumatology conference I ever went to, which was an arthros conference out in Boston. And through that conference, I met Camille Dubin, you know, with RAP, and then ended up learning about RAP, and I was so excited. Your organization gave me a scholarship to attend my first RAP conference out in Arizona. That made it possible for me to go out. So I was so grateful for that. And it was wonderful because I didn't realize how welcoming the world of rheumatology is. And I really had that sense when I went out to Arizona and attended, you know, all the different conference sessions. And it was really nice for me. I spent a year working in primary care after I graduated. So basically, I was working in primary care, but I was doing CMEs in rheumatology. I was attending these conferences, learning a ton, and building my base as a primary care provider which I think is really important, because going into rheumatology and having that primary care background, so many of the diseases that we treat in rheumatology are systemic, and that to have that broader base is really critical, I think. It also keeps me from seeing and listening to the stories patients present I'm not wearing rheumatology blinders when a patient's talking to me. So working in primary care for a year, I think was valuable in both those regards.
Absolutely. I mean, it really did kind of prep you for, you know, being the best clinician in rheumatology. I mean, I totally agree. I think, you know, when we deal with these diseases, right, they can be so, to your point, systemic. And so, you know, we need to have an understanding of the lungs and the heart and the GI tract and all of those things, because in the kidneys, I mean, unfortunately, a lot of our diseases affect all of those areas. So I can only imagine that year was, you know, invaluable to where you are now. You know, and I guess that kind of brings me to my next question, which is knowing a little bit more about your practice. You know, I think as APPs, obviously there are varying roles in rheumatology, and I think it's great for our listeners to hear about yours. So on that note, you know, I guess I'd like to understand, you know, what diseases you're seeing. Are you seeing new patients? And also, you know, how were you integrated into your practice? And you know, again, a lot of questions here, but if there's any guidance you might have to a new APP joining rheumatology, because I think, you know, so many of us have been in it for so long that it's hard to remember when you were, you know, year one and year two and year three. So I'd love to understand those things as well.
I feel really lucky to be where I am. I'm in a private practice in Connecticut. There are three doctors. There's me, I'm the PA. There's an APRN, and it's a really wonderful, you know, supportive group of people. I sent out my resume, you know, and I was very, very lucky that they picked it up and welcomed me in. As far as being integrated into the practice, I'm really lucky. I wasn't just thrown in and, you know, told to go, you know, okay, get to work. It was almost like entering a residency and being precepted all over again for really the first few months. It was kind of gradual, where I would see patients with my mentors, and I worked with all of the doctors in the practice, and just to see how they worked and how they went about listening to the patients, responding to the patients, you know, what diagnostic labs did they order, imaging did they order, how do they, you know, what were they looking for? What conditions were they treating for? How do they do their musculoskeletal exams? That's an art, and that takes practice, especially in rheumatology. It's a little bit different from primary care. How do they talk to patients when patients, you know, first received a diagnosis, for instance, of rheumatoid arthritis? How do you explain the difference to patients between osteoarthritis and inflammatory arthritis, for instance? How do you talk about a medication like a TNF inhibitor, for instance, to a patient? You have to address the patient's concerns, which primarily tend to be, you know, you have to tell them, my goals are to do no harm, to make you feel better, and to prevent progression of the disease. And, you know, so the nature of the conversations that my mentors were having with the patients, where it was just so important to see that and to understand how to do that. And the other thing, too, that's really tricky about rheumatology is you may know the drugs and you may know the different autoimmune and inflammatory conditions that we treat. But what's the decision making process for choosing one drug over another? And when do we escalate therapies? And when do we add on therapies? And so it's kind of like the Kenny Rogers song, you got to know when to hold them, know when to fold them, know when to walk away, know when to run. You're playing with this deck of cards, but how do you use it for the benefit of the patient? So, you know, and gradually, you know, I worked with them, and then I would see patients on my own, and then they'd come in kind of at the end of the session with the patient and talk, you know, I talk out a case with them, and then they come in and they say, and my mentor, I work with Dr. Robert Schoen, who's this wonderful, wonderful person. And he would always give me credit for the decision made on the patient's behalf. Like, well, Mary had this great idea, and, you know, and maybe I did, maybe I didn't, but there was just this feeling of support all the time. And another thing that was really wonderful was Dr. Schoen and I applied for a Rheumatology Research Foundation grant. There's a grant for mentoring a new NP or PA in rheumatology that I really recommend that new PA, you know, if you're going into the field, look into that grant, because it really enabled them to be able to take me on, you know, and train me. And it also requires that you go to two conferences, one being the ACR out in San Diego, and which was a wonderful experience. I went with Dr. Schoen. He received a master's designation out there too. So it was a really nice trip on multiple levels. So that was very, very valuable. Just to learn about all the current research in the field, all the current practices, just learn more about diagnosing and treating diseases and all the many, many wonderful sessions. The other thing that they do is it's a requirement, which I'm so excited about. I love it, that you take the ACR Advanced Rheumatology course. So that's been really wonderful to work through as well. As far as the practice itself, though, I will also add that the doctors I work with are also attendings at Yale, and they're on clinical faculty either at Yale or Quinnipiac, and I have clinical privileges too at Yale, and I'm able to go to grand rounds and learn about a lot of the new research in immunology and rheumatology. So it's just a wonderful way to stay abreast of academic developments as well.
To me, it seems like what you've described to me is kind of like the perfect and best case scenario for someone new to the field. I love that you're, you know, supervising Dr. I'm sorry, you said his name is Dr. Schoen?
Dr. Schoen, yeah. No.
You know, that Robert when Schoen. You walk in the room together, that he would always give you the credit. I think that that does two things. I think that that obviously builds your confidence, but also builds the confidence for the patient, right? Because, you know, sometimes there can be a little bit of, you know, especially when you're a little newer to the field and perhaps sharing patients, of, you know, the fear that the patient may have that, you know, I'm seeing this person, is this person the same? Do they have, you know, do they have the same abilities? And so what a wonderful way to just set the tone that you know exactly what you're doing and that these patients can trust you. So I think that's just such a beautiful relationship and such a wonderful way to integrate an APP into the practice.
Yeah, it's been really important for me. And I think it, for anybody going into any field of medicine, work with people who build you up and people who support you and want you to succeed.
I couldn't agree more. I mean, I think that's what it's all about. And I think that that's what's so important. And what we really tried to emphasize in, particularly in RAP, is that you should be able to practice at the top of your scope. Of course, you need the appropriate mentorship and guidance and education. But with all of those things, you can practice, you know, very, very similarly and, you know, and with confidence and with really, really good patient outcomes and with the highest level of quality, you know, that all of our patients deserve.
Absolutely. And what it leads to is very much a team approach. And so the patients get to know you, they get to see you as a team, like, oh, you'll see Mary this week, or you'll see Dr. Schoen this week, or you'll see, or one of our, you know, Dr. Carlson, Dr. Yip, Kylie. I think it fosters a really nice relationship and a really positive vibe within the practice. By the way, we have an amazing support staff, and I really have to say I love the people in our practice, and I hope they don't mind me saying that because it's a really nice organization. And you had also asked, do you see new patients? Yes, I do. I see patients independently, treat and diagnose patients independently. We go back and forth. So I do follow-ups as well. So it kind of depends on the particular patient or condition or whatever. But as far as the conditions we treat, you had asked about that. There's inflammatory arthritis, so rheumatoid, psoriatic, spondyloarthritis, Lyme arthritis. We see that in Connecticut. Gout, a lot of polymyalgia rheumatica. Autoimmune diseases, so lupus, Sjogren's, scleroderma, antiphospholipid antibody syndrome, vasculitis we treat, so ankylovasculitis, giant cell arteritis. There's always, osteoporosis too. We run into, you know, patients with we treat patients with osteoarthritis and inflammatory arthritis. There's a lot of overlap sometimes there. And also like myositis, polymyositis, dermatomyositis, sarcoidosis, getting back to, you know, IgG-related disease, you know, the list goes on, you know.
I think the point, though, that you're showing us and to our listeners is that you're treating it all. You're seeing everything and you're managing everything. And so you're not really, at least in your practice, you're not being kind of pigeonholed into one particular, you know, type of patient, which, again, you know, I may be biased here, but I think that that's amazing. I think that that's appropriate. And I think, again, that's part of practicing to your scope, you know, not getting bored with one particular thing, being able to see all of it, I think is absolutely incredible. Of course, we do have APPs that specialize in lupus, and there are lupologists and, you know, all of the different things, which I think is amazing too. But you know, I think it's particularly as a foundation, I think seeing everything and knowing how to diagnose everything, which you know, my personal opinion, I think seeing new patients is important, because I think you do then learn what are the right questions. What is it? What does that physical exam look like initially? You know, I think sometimes it's important to be on that journey with the patient throughout, you know, their disease progression, because when you see them from the beginning, you watch this entire journey. I mean, there's been patients I've been seeing for, you know, I've been in Northern Colorado now since, gosh, 2010. And there's been patients that I have seen since that time. And so, you know, it's just remarkable to watch this journey together. And I remember what happened 10 years ago. And so I think that's absolutely, absolutely incredible. So,
yeah.
You know, I guess that kind of segues into a next question for you. But, you know, what, you know, as a PA in rheumatology, you know, what advice do you have for individuals who are considering a career as a PA in this field? And also, are there specific qualities or skills that are particularly beneficial for success in rheumatology? You know, really, I think maybe gearing towards, again, people that are maybe not in rheumatology, but considering it, or students, because we have both that are listening to this podcast. So what advice would you have for them?
Well, I already touched on the importance of going. For me, it was valuable to go into primary care first. And just to be a little bit more specific about that, if you were playing a match game with cards, you could put rheumatoid arthritis with interstitial lung disease. You can put psoriatic arthritis with uveitis. You can put spondyloarthritis with heart block, gout with chronic kidney disease, Sjogren's with hypergammaglobulinemia. So you never look at a rheumatological disease in a vacuum. It's connected to all of these other conditions. And we always want, especially that new patient visit, we are doing a big review of systems. We're asking all the questions to figure out what's going on. And that's why I think primary care really helped. And I mentioned, you know, you don't want to look at these autoimmune diseases with rheumatology blinders on. You want to have seen the wider rainbow before you wear the green glasses and walk into the Emerald City. The second point that I have is never refuse an invitation to a party. And by that, I'm stealing that line from this lady, Mrs. Giffler, from my hometown of Corning, New York, who would accept all invitations that came her way. And she was a lot of, you know, she made you feel special when she went out. She made any party feel like a special occasion. And she just kept receiving invitations to go out. And that's how it was for me. So, you know, I mentioned Rick Pope. He invited me to join SPAR. He introduced me to rheumatologists in Connecticut, and then he suggested the conference in Boston. And I could have said, oh, no, I'm tired. It's a weekend. You know, I've got a lot of patients to chart. But I went. I accepted that invitation. And then that led to another invitation to go to RAP. And then at this conference, I also met Grace Wright, you know, from AWARE, American Women in Rheumatology. And she said, you should really join this organization. And then there was the application for Rheumatology Research Fund. That was like, I view that as an invitation, apply. Okay, let's do that. There were other opportunities, the Yale Symposium for Rheumatology Conference, Connecticut Rheumatology Association conferences. The Connecticut APA or Association of Physician Associate Conference. There's all these opportunities that keep coming up, and just go and get your CMEs while you're doing it too, and learn. So I just took advantage of all these opportunities to learn, and those were really, really valuable. The other advice that I would have is the first year, and I think maybe my second, third, and fourth year of rheumatology, there's like a residency, and I have to read at night. When I research a patient, or when I write up a patient, I am always looking things up all the time and researching around that patient. And for me, I love that. That's what I love about medicine. So I love looking at the journals. I love going to the up-to-date. I love listening to podcasts about autoimmune and inflammatory disease on my commute. I take advantage of that, you know, and like Adam Brown, he talks about the complement cascade using a medieval analogy, right? I look for those opportunities to understand concepts in immunology and really take advantage of them. And that's outside work, and that takes time. And there's an expectation that you really need to do that to understand the field better. But if this is your idea of being a colada and getting stuck in the rain, so to speak, you know, then rheumatology is for you. I love the academic part of it. And I'm a lifelong learner, and I feel like I'll always be at the bottom of the learning curve in this field, but that's exciting to me too, because, you know, I'll never stop learning.
I love that. I think that's so important, being a lifelong learner, and understanding that if you go into this field, you know, this is not one of the fields where you come home and you don't need to continue to learn. I mean, you really, if you want to be successful, I think just like what you said, I think it's finding multiple areas where you can find resources, education. You mentioned so many wonderful resources, and I think all of them are important to being successful in this field and staying in this field.
Right.
Now, one of the things in your piece, you drive home a point with a quote from a Dr. Glockum Flecken skit, who is, by the way, he's hilarious. I love him. Excuse me. On how to ace your rheumatology interview, where acting as the interviewer, he asks, why is rheumatology the most difficult specialty? I think that drives home the learning curve for those pursuing rheumatology. So what has aided you in overcoming that barrier thus far?
Yeah, I love that point. And by the way, the answer to that is because there are 1,000 diseases and they can do anything at any time for any reason whatsoever. And then he asked the question, rheumatoid arthritis? And he says, well, I mean, what's it doing on the lungs? There are no joints in the lungs. And it's true. It's not only that there's 1,000 different diseases, but there's a muddiness, not a muddy. There's just the diseases are intertwined. I mean, I've had patients referred to me for rheumatoid arthritis in the lungs, and they're complicated cases. I mean, the particular patient I'm thinking of, the questions that I'm asking are you going to recommend abatacept or rituximab? In what ways does a patient see eosinophilia, polyclonal gammopathy complicate or advise treatment of the disease? You know, there's tough questions that we're asking around these 10,000 diseases. And how do we deal with that learning curve? And I thought about that from two perspectives, from the top down and from the bottom up. And by that, I'll talk about the top down first. So my first rheumatology conference, you go and there's all the tables of all, you know, all the pharmaceutical representatives who I love talking to, because they're very helpful, very knowledgeable. And there's so many different medications that we use in rheumatology. There's, you know, the biologics, there's the TNF inhibitors, there's the JAK inhibitors, the IL-17s, the IL-6s, you know, there's just so many things that we use. And it can be really overwhelming to, you know, to become acquainted with all of those different therapies. And so we're greeted at once going into the field with, here are all the solutions, you know, all the pamphlets, all the explanations of all the drugs that we use. So there's also data, there's also clinical trials that I categorize, you know, that I put in that category. Then there's the other aspect of entering the field, and that's from the bottom up. Here are all the problems. And, you know, here's distinguishing osteoarthritis from inflammatory arthritis. Here's the musculoskeletal exam. Here are the basics of the field. And so all at once, when you come into the field, you're dealing with rheumatology from the top down, all the complexity, the mechanisms of the action, the therapies, the clinical trials, the data dumps, all of these things. And then you're dealing with the basics. And you're coming at the field from those two separate directions. And that makes the learning curve, I think, especially challenging. And for me, it's just, I think what was really helpful for me was not learning all this in a vacuum, but, you know, working with my mentors in the private practice, learning the basics of the, you know, learning from the bottom up, learning to differentiate osteoarthritis from inflammatory arthritis based on findings in a musculoskeletal exam, for instance. And then, going to the conferences, you know, talking to representatives, you know, talking to medical science liaisons, talking to people in the field, PharmDs, and also, you know, just going to all the sessions and going, you know, drug by drug, learning what these drugs do, learning what the clinical trials are, and in kind of addressing those two elements of the field together, separately but together, to, you know, have a stronger knowledge of it.
Yeah, that you are so eloquent when you speak. I just want to continue to listen to you. you know, this has been such a wonderful conversation. You know, is there anything that we missed? Is there anything you'd like to leave our listeners with? Anything we didn't talk about that you can think of that you'd like for people to know about you or rheumatology or anything in general?
Yeah, you know, I guess if I had to say one thing to anybody going into, you know, rheumatology or any field of medicine, it would have to address the idea of the notion of authenticity or being true to yourself. And for me, going into this field was like coming home for the reasons that I discussed, you know, growing up in a small town, being part of a community, the mystery, you know, the mystery solving aspect of the field. So this is a very comfortable place for me to be. And it's bound up, I should say, with questions of meaning and purpose for me. And I'm looking forward to, you know, exploring this field for, you know, a few decades ahead. But what I would have to add would be, pay attention to what makes you you. And even though you think something may be viewed by others as a weakness, that is something integral to yourself when you're going into medicine, this may prove to be your strength in medicine. So what do I mean by that? For me, I was always trying to sort of shove two of my perceived weaknesses under the rug when going into medicine. The first would be my age. I did not know what a PA in rheumatology was until my late 40s. And I know exactly when I know exactly the date. I was, you know, here I was raising these four kids. After I earned my PhD, I was raising my four kids. My husband was traveling, and all the time in the back of my head, I was like, I missed my calling. I had regrets that I hadn't gone. I loved having gone into English and, you know, the humanities and everything, but I always felt that nagging in the back of my head. And one day, I met with one of my friends who's a doctor, and we were having coffee in New Haven. And I shared this feeling with her, and she said, you know, you should really think about becoming a PA. And I didn't know what a PA was. This was in my late 40s. And somehow after she described what it was, and I went, wow, this sounds really good. I think this is what I want to do. And I remember that date because that was the date of the Sandy Hook shooting. And Connecticut, I was driving over the bridge and I heard the news over the radio, and I thought, I just have to get home. And this was, I guess my decision to go into medicine has always been bound up with this moment where, you know, I decided to become a PA, but at the same time, there was a sense of calling to enter the world of suffering and somehow be useful. And I just can't separate the decision to become, you know, to become a PA from that day. And for me, you know, there's always been this connection between entering the healthcare field in this world of profound human pain. Okay, so I learned about the field late, but it was going into it, there's always this deep sense of meaning for me. And I guess what made it hard to go into the field was, you know, people would say, well, you're too old. They're never going to take you. I was told that they're never going to take you into a PA school. What do you think about your age? You know, they're going to think you're doing this as, you know, for fun, that this is sort of like taking up painting or taking up a hobby and you're not serious enough about it, or that you lack the cognitive ability to go into the field. And it made it really hard. And so I always felt like I had to kind of hide my age and be strong and be fit and be youthful. And so I would be, you know, be in the running with everybody else. And I was also told to hide my age on resumes when I was applying for jobs after PA school. And so that was one weakness that I had to be careful about downplaying. Even though I was really passionate about going into this field, the second thing was I had this background in English, not science necessarily, not immunology. And I was also advised, you know, delete that part from your resume. Don't talk about your teaching. Don't talk about, you know, don't talk about that stuff so much, because nobody's going to be interested in that. And so I did, you know, I hid those things and I played all those things down. And now I find that as a, you know, in rheumatology, those two things are what are really working for me. And so I can relate to patients. I have a sort of life experience that allows me to talk to people going through really difficult situations and enduring, you know, dealing with really difficult conditions and painful conditions. And the other thing too is, you know, I'm getting older too. I can feel it. I can feel that osteoarthritis in my CMC joints. And so when somebody's complaining about it, I can say, hey, I'd hear you. and then the other thing too would be, you know, the English part and the story part. And I just, you know, I just feel that so much of what we do in rheumatology has to do with storytelling, with patients entrust their stories to you. And you have, you know, You have to pick apart those elements that are important to understanding, you know, what the underlying pathology is, and, you know, put those pieces of the story together in a way that's going to profoundly affect the well-being of the patient and in turn improve their story and improve their quality of life and, you know, health span, so to speak. But so everything became really connected. And I guess I feel because of, you know, I feel I can be authentic to myself in the field that I'm in, and would encourage anybody else, if you feel like you're not able to be your true self, or, you know, you have to hide things, or you can't be who you are or who you're called to be, then maybe rethink what you're doing.
Absolutely. I can't thank you enough. I mean, you truly, thank you for sharing your story. You really are inspirational, I have to say. And I think that this particular episode, I think, will resonate with so many of our listeners, and perhaps people that, you know, are, to your point, are struggling with who they are and what they maybe truly should be. So with that, thank you for joining us on this enlightening episode of RapCast. We extend our heartfelt gratitude to Mary Elliott for sharing her expertise and passion with us today. That was very, very evident as you were talking. Through her insights, we've gained a deeper understanding of the transition from primary care to rheumatology. Be sure to stay connected and be the first to hear about our upcoming episodes by following our podcast. And don't forget to explore the Wrap ecosystem further. Download the innovative Wrap ACE app for an enhanced experience. Visit our informative website at wrap.org and connect with us on Twitter at RoomAPP and Instagram at RoomAPP for the latest updates, insightful content, and exciting announcements. Together, let's embark on a journey of knowledge and empowerment for advanced practice providers in rheumatology. With that, I'm your host, Amanda Mixon, and join us next time on Wrapcast.